Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week we'll be hearing about water search and rescue dogs from Mick McCarthy in East Cork, an update on the progress of the IDRA 14 being built in Clontarfiatham Boat Club, which started last summer, the Port of Cork Schools Initiative. First, this week, to the Skyline Gallery in Kenmare, which features wonderful landscapes and seascapes by photographer Owen Kavanagh. The last time we met Owen here on Seascapes, it was at the Keogh Naughton University of Notre Dame Centre in Merrion Square during the Tall Ships races in the summer of 2012 with the director of the centre, Kevin Whelan. Well, recently Owen came into studio and he recalled the support he'd received.
And that was, I suppose, the beginning of me putting together this book as well, because Kevin, who runs that centre, he wrote the foreword for the book as well, and I know Kevin well, helped me out a lot over in the past. So I think after that, I enjoyed that exhibition and the time in Dublin. I continually am asked for a book, a collection of the work so far, and I couldn't really come up with a reason to do it, because I always thought it would be the full book of Ireland or whatever. And then after a really busy season in the gallery, I decided it was time to take a few days out to try and look at doing our next project. The Skellex project was the last one, and that went really well. So we decided we need to do something else. And actually, that project hasn't come off yet, but I wanted to do this sort of retrospective or look back first, kind of to clear the table and have a fresh start. So I would think that seascapes is what I would prefer to do all the time. And I'm always drawn to the sea, and that idea of the skyline is the open sea and sky. And, you know, that's a big project that I want to come back to. And part of doing the book was to clear the way for that project. And since opening the gallery, I suppose being in Kerry, in the mountains, and I seem to have not had to go so far to find beautiful landscape. And I seem to just concentrate around the mountains and lakes, and someone came into the gallery recently and commented on that and said there's a lot of people photograph the sea a lot, and I would have thought I did too, but it seems like there has been a lot of landscapes recently, but the sea is what I really am drawn to, and that's where I want to go.
Now, your images of Barley Lake are magnificent because it's somewhere that you have to really go to a bit of trouble to get there.
Well, actually, getting to Barley Lake isn't that difficult. You can actually, if you have the right vehicle, there's a road that goes to the top of that mountain. But it's funny you mentioned that one, because I was thinking about that and the light at Barley Lake, and that an image that I have in my head. A few years ago, I was driving back across from Barley Lake, across the Caha Pass, and I actually had the cameras with me, which is unusual. I wouldn't usually carry cameras with me unless I planned to work. And I could see the light coming through the clouds and kind of shining through and lighting up little patches, and I thought, you know, this is going to be a great image. I should make this picture now. And I stopped the car and I got out and I started to get the cameras ready, and I figured I had about maybe 20 minutes or something, just to wait for the right spots to come in the right places. And then I actually consciously decided not to take that picture and just sit there and watch the whole thing happen. And I was thinking about it on the way this morning to you, and that people often ask me what is my favourite picture, and I do have a picture that is my favourite, but my real favourite is that image which I didn't take, and it's in my head. And I like that idea that not every image has to be taken, and I think people rush around a lot now, particularly photography has become very quick and disposable, that it's much nicer to take a little bit more time and maybe lose a couple of images, and those images are then personal to me. Just that images go up so quick on Facebook and the likes, and they're gone. And I like the idea, and particularly producing the book gives people time to sort of slowly contemplate images. I wouldn't say that I have really heroes. I actually don't look at a lot of photography and a lot of books and stuff like that for reference. And the idea of capturing something, like you see something and you take the picture straight away. That's almost a different side of photography. My way of working would be much slower than that. I would see something, think about how I wanted it to look, see, figure out what weather I wanted, figure out where the wind, the tide, whatever, all these different elements. And I'd slowly then put it all together. So the idea, like, that's as people, some rarely do I carry a camera. I just don't like to see that things may happen. I want to know that they're going to happen. And I'll go to a place again and again until what I have in my head actually happens. And if it doesn't happen, well, you either go back or you just make adjustments. But I think for me, I was never able to just quickly pick up a camera and take a picture. It always took more time than that. Support is probably the key part of this, and connections and friendships. Everybody who comes into the gallery, they either meet me or my wife, or if we're busy in the summer, there might be one or two other people there. But we're always in the background when we're always talking to our people, customers. And without customers, people to buy this stuff, I just couldn't continue. So when I wanted to do the book, I have been asked to do it for a long time. I needed a reason myself. But then we made a little website up, put the idea, the concept together, and asked people, would you like to buy this book? And if you do, we need a little bit of money up front just to get it up and running, that I know, you know, I can get it off the out the door. So we put a very quick website together. I sent it out to my people who are on my mailing list and Facebook, that sort of stuff. And I think within certainly 30, 40 seconds of launching it, I'd sold 5 books. So that was it. I was committed. I needed now to make the book. And within a week, we sold the first 100, and we limited it to the first 100. Those people got an edition copy. And then that enabled me to go to the bank then and borrow the rest. And that was, you know, after that. Funny enough, when the weather is bright, I don't like really to work, as in take pictures. But when the sun shines, everybody goes to the beach, and I totally understand that. So it was a challenging enough summer in that respect, but overall it was certainly a better summer. More people in the door. Every year we work hard every year, and we build on the connections that we make from the year before, and every year it just gets that tiny little bit easier.
What about the next project in terms of seascapes, which, as you say, are close to your heart?
Yeah, the Skellex was a wonderful experience, and I maybe will go back and look at that again in a few years. But I think for me, the next, like, producing this book was an important thing to clear the decks. And then for the future, I want to come up with a project. I probably do one very sort of short, quick project, just with the idea of the skyline, which will just be the sea and the sky. And I haven't quite decided exactly what will be the elements, but possibly storms coming in, and maybe just do a series, maybe over maybe 24 hours, maybe a couple of weeks, but quite a short thing, and that will just clear my head, and then I can focus on another project. What that will be, I haven't decided, but I'll put it out to people. If they're interested in it, and I'm interested in it, I'll make it happen. I suppose, like, Ansel Adams is the iconic landscape photographer. Everybody knows him. No matter who you are, you've pretty much heard of Ansel Adams. I mean, not that I would know his work very well, but what I liked about him, particularly in an interview I saw about him, he didn't like to produce a lot of work. And his idea was that he'd produce one good image a month. And I think that's I would say to people in the gallery, that's what I aim to do. One good picture a month, and I'm absolutely happy with that. So not to try and produce a lot of stuff, you know, the quality will end up going down. He obviously thought about what he was doing. He had a particular project that he managed to complete. You know, I wouldn't have an overall hero, but I liked his work ethic.
Owen Kavanagh of the Skyline Gallery in Kenmare. Those images may be seen at the gallery and also in the latest book from Skyline. Visit www.skyline.ie/book. A magnificent tome on the National 18-foot dinghy by Brian Wolfe, documenting the boat's 75-year history, was launched last month. The book is described as essential reading for sailors, boat restorers, or builders, or those who were and are involved with the class through the course of its great history. Staying with books, and to the winner of Nigel Millard's Lifeboat,
Courage on Our Coasts, published by Conway. Many thanks for all your cards and emails. We asked you to name the Irish river that gives its name to the new RNLI class of lifeboat. The answer was the Shannon. And a signed copy of the book is on its way to Mary O'Connor in Templeogue in Dublin. Congratulations, Mary. The copies of the Irish Tide Tables 2014, courtesy of Maps and Charts, are on their way in the post to all those who've submitted correct entries, naming three Irish ports. Next here on Seascapes, to the world of search and rescue dogs. Mick McCarthy grew up with dogs. He is a skilled search and rescue dog handler on land and at sea, and a founding member of the Search and Rescue Dog Association of Ireland and the British Overseas Disaster Unit. I talked to him a few days ago about the work involved.
Yes, I did grow up with them, and I did with the usual hunting. I was in a beagle club for a short while. I went out coursing for a while. And I love hunting still, but I don't hunt animals. We hunt people. And I started competing with dogs in obedience competitions and agility. And, of course, being the type I wasn't happy with that. I felt there was something else. So I moved on to the next level, which is, naively, I started training search dogs, as I thought at the time, using tracking dogs, which we were using for competition, naively believing that they were capable of doing a job. So I got in contact with Con Moriarty. I saw his name on the paper, Kerry Mountain Rescue Team. Con became very enthusiastic and put me in contact with a guy in the north of Ireland who was actually doing mountain rescue with dogs. And as it turns out, his parents lived in Cove. So when he next visited his parents, he called up to us to our training grounds and went through our dogs, totally dismissed the dogs that we thought were good, and picked a couple of puppies we had and said, start with them. And of course, the big problem when you're training dogs is that the hardest person to train is somebody who has already trained dogs for other purposes, because they won't listen. And I didn't listen. And it took me 3 years, consequently, to train a dog, because I thought I knew more and I knew better. And but I didn't. And it started from there then. And he, in turn, Neil Powell, he started working on water search, and probably one of the first people in Europe to do it. And certainly one of the foremost authorities on water search, or land search for that matter, with dogs as well. It's his total passion. He began to give me a few ideas, and I started experimenting, reading up, phoning people all over the world, cost a fortune to make contact because we didn't have internet access, wrote to people, annoyed people, peed people off many times, I'm sure. But all along the way, you were gathering, storing information, some good, some bad, and you had to analyse it, experiment, see did it work, did it not work. And that's how we got going eventually. So it was trial and error mainly. Training a dog, say, for water search is extremely time-consuming and involves 2, 3, 4, 5 people and the use of a boat. So for maybe a 5-minute training session could take 1 hour or 2 hours to set up, using the techniques we were sort of pretending we knew about. But there is no official accreditation anywhere in the world, anywhere, whether it is police or civilian, for search dogs. There are local like NSAID in England and Britain covers SAID Ireland, which we're not members of, but which I was, and are a total credible organisation. They have their own assessors, which are people who would have risen to a level with their dogs and then became assessors. It's the same with, like, for instance, the Police Dogs America. There's actually no official test in any police dog unit for a search dog. The dog can either do it or he can't. It's as simple as that. Now, all the police, you enter civilian tests to get some idea of development of the dog, but then they take it to another level. But there is no unit that says, right, we have to test this dog to a level. They don't do that. There are breeds that work better than others. Every breed, for instance, we do air scenting and we do trailing, two different types of search and rescue with dogs. Every dog is capable of trailing. Bloodhounds are better at it. Doesn't mean any other dog can't do it, but it just takes so much longer to train other dogs for it. Bloodhounds have a, I call them a stupid breed, but they're not stupid. Relative to dogs, they're very intelligent, but they just do the job, stick their nose down, that's it, done. But where other breeds will take much longer. With air scenting, undoubtedly the best dog is a German Shepherd. It's so hard to get a good German Shepherd nowadays, to get a dog with the right attitude. You either have the show type, which are brilliant, there's nothing wrong with them other than that they do not, and I thought they had to have the drive to do it for long periods of time. Then you've got the walking type. Many of the walking lines, unfortunately, are so closely bred and interbred and highly bred that they are jumpy out of their skins and difficult to control, bordering on being aggressive. So it's difficult to get a good German Shepherd now suitable for the job. The best dog that you can get at the moment is probably a Collie Labrador cross or a Collie German Shepherd cross. Purebred Collies, not so much, unfortunately. They have too many issues. But if you can get the best one, in my opinion, is a German Shepherd Collie cross, followed by a German Shepherd Labrador cross. But anything that works, terriers even, if they can play, if they like playing with a ball and they have a good work ethic, it's in the head. It's not the breed, it's not the type, it's in the head. It unfortunately, show standards ruin breeds, where the dog has to look pretty, his head needs to be such a way, his tail needs to be such a way, which is a load of gobbledygook. It has nothing. These standards were drawn up many years ago by people who never walked a dog in their life in general. They showed them and kept them as pets, but they don't know what a walking dog should do or act like. And if they did, it was mainly for competition, which is nothing like real life. So, you know, mixed breeds are generally better. Well, the deepest my dog found was 200 feet of water off Dunmore East, 5 miles out, which was confirmed. There are people who class themselves as dog experts. Ignore them. Anybody who sets himself up as a dog expert, ignore them. Dogs don't speak English, so we're only, in our arrogant human way, we're presuming to know how it works. Every day I train a dog, there's something new. So I don't know anything, and anybody that pretends they do is bluffing it. Ideally, it shouldn't take more than an hour and a half to 2 hours to learn how to train a dog. If it takes you longer than that, rehome your dog. You shouldn't have one, because that's all you need to know in the psychology of a dog. There's nothing in it. But there are books written. There are people going around claiming that you need... Dogs are so difficult and so hard to train. You need... dog psychology, you need to go to these courses and that courses. If you have to pay to go to learn to train a dog, please give your dog away to somebody else, because there is nothing in it. It is very basic and simple. And until dogs speak English and turn back to us and speak in our language and explain to us what kind of idiots we are for believing we know how to do it, then we shouldn't own them. But dogs are far superior to us. Now, the training, a search dog, without being glib, if you have the right dog with the right attitude, it's, again, as I said earlier, it's all in the head. The dog has the right walk ethic. They call it a drive now, like walk drive. There's different drives in a dog. They claim a load of gobbledygook. A dog either wants to walk or not. You don't have to be... Us humans feel the need all the time to label things. We have to put a label on it. It's dog aggressive. It's food aggressive. What a load of baloney. What did the old guys do? The best people to learn how to train your dog is the old guy with the harriers up the road, or the greyhounds, or the terriers who goes out hunting. They know more and probably have forgotten more about dogs than all of us put together who pretend we know. And that's all it is. We pretend we know. We don't.
We'll have more from Mick McCarthy on next week's edition of Seascapes on those water rescue dogs. You can read more about the work involved in Search of the Missing by Mick McCarthy and Patricia Ahern, published by the Mercier Press. The Port of Cork has launched their schools initiative for 2014 and is encouraging all fifth-class primary school teachers to get their classes involved. This year's theme, Shipping Containers, Cork's Connection to World Markets, focuses on the importance of trade between Cork and the world and the important use of shipping containers for importing and exporting cargo. For more information on this year's school's initiative or to arrange a visit by the Port of Cork to your school, you can contact Sarah McKeown in the Port of Cork. Her email is smckeown, that's S-M-A-C-K-E-O-W-N, at portofcork.ie. In a fortnight, it's time again for the very popular Bantry Lifeboat Dinner Dance, which is to be held at the Maritime Hotel in Bantry on Saturday the 25th of January. Tickets are still only €25 each and include dinner, live music with the very talented Cat Squire, followed by live horse racing in the hotel ballroom. Tickets are available from all members of Bantry Lifeboat or from fast.net Bridge Street in Bantry. Further details, contact Toby on 027 51624. That's Toby on 027 51624. Music of Alton there and Donal Agus Mórig. Now on a totally different topic, Ronan Melling writes from Clontarf Yacht and Boat Club, thought you might be interested in our latest update on building the IDRA 14 in Clontarf. Since you mentioned us on Seascapes last summer, we've had various visitors to our boat shed and we are now at planking stage of the boat build. And we'll keep you up to date with developments in Clontarf and that building of the IDRA 14. Finally this week to the latest edition of Inshore Ireland magazine, we head to our Galway studios where we can hear from features editor Gerry Flynn.
Inshore Ireland's January lead story examines why an article on sea lice in a prestigious international science journal was later downgraded by the publishers, who also apologised to the Marine Institute for not giving it the right of reply prior to publication. We describe this as the latest twist in what has become a highly charged debate involving some of Ireland's environmental state agencies, as well as fishery scientists here and abroad. More background to this story emerges in an article on page 7 by Alec O'Donovan of Save Bantry Bay, alleging that the Department of Marine exerted pressure on the Department of Energy to agree with its findings during an EU pilot investigation into the Galway Bay proposal. Argument is also the subject of Pádraig Gallagher's page 4 article, claiming that the lack of consultation with West Cork inshore fishermen on a proposed draft plan to manage activities within Roaring Water Bay could seriously impact up to 100 families and the entire local community. Gallagher writes that what began in 2011 as a collaborative process involving the local fishing community, BIM and the Marine Institute, ended in 2012 following an intervention from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. He claims there has been no direct interaction with either fishermen or representative organisations since. And he quotes Francis O'Donnell, chair of the Federation of Irish Fishermen, saying that what happened in Roaring Water Bay was not good enough, and that stakeholder consultation should mean consultation with fishermen and their organisations. How best to develop Ireland's marine leisure infrastructure is the subject of an article on page 6 by marine consultant Norman Keane, who claims that despite having some of the finest sailing waters in the world, Ireland's marine leisure industry remains underdeveloped. He warns that trying to invest in this potentially rewarding sector is a bureaucratic nightmare. And despite what he says are the good intentions of the Harnessing Our Ocean Wealth strategy, Keane claims that Ireland's marine planning guidelines are vague, planning decisions are made in a knowledge vacuum, and foreshore licensing can take years and cost a fortune. On pages 8 and 9, we distill the thoughts of three key experts from the marine sector for our now regular end-of-year review. From the researcher's perspective, Dr. Peter Heffernan, CEO of the Marine Institute, notes that despite five challenging years of cuts in both the Institute's funding base and staffing levels, high standards were maintained in their frontline services. Looking to the future, Dr. Heffernan is optimistic because it is clear to him that marine interests are firmly part of the architecture of our national science plans and priorities. The regulator's angle, by the chair of the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, Dr. Susan Steele, welcomes the fact that its coastal patrols, together with Inland Fisheries Ireland in 2013, revealed a high level of compliance within the inshore industry. Nevertheless, Dr. Steele notes that unlicensed fishermen and the holding of V-notched and undersized lobsters remain problems. Taking the fishing industry's viewpoint, Francis O'Donnell of the FIF describes as stark the EU Commission proposal in terms of fishing opportunities for the whitefish sector in northwestern waters. Finally, six packed pages in our marine R&D section highlight the exciting trends emerging for those thinking of a maritime career. We have positive news from the Halpin Centre for Research and Innovation at NMCI, and there's also a fascinating feature on the latest vessels to join the growing fleet of Fastnet Shipping Limited as it looks to the opportunities in the offshore wind farm support and turbine transfer market. This and much more in your January issue of Inshore Ireland.
Gerry Flynn, features editor of Inshore Ireland magazine. Next Friday night here on Seascapes, writer and broadcaster Hugh Oram on the Newry to Lough Neagh Canal. We'll have the second half of our conversation with Mick McCarthy, search and rescue dog handler, on the water rescue dogs. Music from Liam Clancy with the Lough Tay Boat Song and the remarkable story of an Arctic boy's journey to Belmullet. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines, fair sailing.